Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now, always good to have on Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent. Good evening.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
Very well. Were you away for a few weeks?
Yeah, got up to Meath, Cavan border to discover the Hidden Heartlands, I think they're called. So, refreshed and ready to go for the new season, the old season, whatever it is.
The Hidden Heartlands, okay. I didn't realise that. Well, I mean, good, because this is it now. You're locked in for about 12 months straight.
Yeah, I think the Lions series, if everything goes to plan, and there's a lot that could go wrong from here, the Lions series in South Africa finishes around this time next year. So it's going to be pretty relentless once it actually gets going. After five, you know, it's from a famine to a feast. After 5 months of no rugby, it's going to be non-stop from here on in. So after that long without it, you're pretty happy to get back going again.
I would think so. Stuart Lancaster was speaking today.
He was, yeah. He was doing like ourselves. He was on a Teams call. So, yeah, Leinster put him up today. We're starting to gear up towards Leinster Munster at the Aviva next Saturday or Saturday week. And it's always good to talk to Stuart. He's one of the better communicators in the game. He's very clear about what he does and always interesting to listen to him.
So what was the gist? What's going on there?
Bit of everything. I mean, he's one of these people who's he's not afraid to take every topic on its merits. I listened to your interview with Leo Cullen, who's a far trickier interviewee. He's a better sidestepper in interviews than he was as a player. I think the big headline that's out there at the moment is about his interest in taking on a Lions role. You know, he spoke with Warren Gatland previously, not specifically about becoming a Lions coach, but I think Gatland will come back. Gatland's commitments in New Zealand will finish after the Chiefs had a pretty awful Super Rugby out to Aotearoa, finished up last weekend. Gatland's now pretty much free to come back and start concentrating on the Lions once he's kind of debriefed there. And he'll be putting together the next step is that he'll talk to the unions and all that sort of thing and see who's available. You'd imagine the RFU won't be that keen on Andy Farrell going, for example, even though he's been on the last two tours. Whereas Lancaster, you know, his star has risen to such an extent at Leinster, he would seem, and also his Leinster commitments will finish no matter what before the Lions get going, he would seem like a really obvious good candidate to go and tour South Africa and really add to what Warren Gatland has to offer.
He would, not least because of the way he has worked under Leo Cullen, and Gatland will happily be that figure, and Lancaster equally, which is important, will happily be the on-the-field figure as well.
Yeah, and he has a really... I think the Saracens players are going to backbone this Lions tour. I think, you know, the fact that they're going to be playing in the championship all year and, you know, we'll be lightly raced across the year. We'll turn out for England. We'll turn out against Leinster and, you know, we'll play a couple of games in the championship across the year to get them over the line. He has a really good relationship. Well, a really long-standing relationship. Some of it might have broken down over the 2015 World Cup, but I'm sure that will be, you know, left firmly in the past. I mean, he gave most of that England generation their test debuts. And, it'd be a lovely redemption story as well if he was to go and take them on a tour. I think the fact that he's such a good working relationship with the Leinster players, with those players as well who's worked with in England, I mean, that's going to be a good chunk. And Gatland has a long-standing relationship with the Welsh crew. You know, that's a pretty good base to go from. You know, I know there will be a few Scots, but they'll get over pretty quickly, I'm sure. They're just happy to be there.
But no one cares about the Scots. That's frankly what you're building.
Stuart Hogg and the rest of them can be behind.
Okay, so we may well see Lancaster on a Lions tour. 12 days to Leinster against Munster at the Aviva Stadium. What's the word on Dan Levy, Rory?
Yeah, it sounds like we will see him in blue maybe in September, but I'm not sure he's going to make this one. I think they're going to be... I don't think he's put a full week's training together yet, so they're going to... You know, he's come off 17 months out with a cataclysmic knee injury. It's a bit of a miracle that he's even able to get to this stage. So I think it might be a little bit more time. I think we'll have to wait before we see him. James Ryan, I think that they're hopeful that he'll make Saracens. I guess Saracens, for all that the four really big games between now and the middle of October when they're, or the middle of September when they're due to play Saracens, that's the big one. So I think anyone who is any sort of a doubt will probably be held back a little bit for that one. So I think they're hopeful of getting Ryan there. Adam Byrne's gone for surgery. He's out for 12 weeks. And they've one or two others, I think. But Ryan and Levy are the big ones. And I think they hope to have Levy back for, if not one of these derbies, a Pro 12 or Pro 14 semi-final. Albeit, like, do you throw a guy in after 17 months in a semi-final? Mm-hmm. Like, where is this guy going to get it? I think there are going to be some Inter-Pro A games. Maybe he comes back in one of those just to give him some sense of easing himself back in. Because the Leinster-Munster and Ulster games are going to be pretty tough. And then it goes straight into knockout rugby.
So that was Lancaster today. Andy Farrell was speaking last week. He's going to have a busy period clearly coming up. What, six tests potentially in 7 weeks and European finals perhaps for Leinster around that. He's got a lot to juggle. So again, it's from famine to feast for him in a serious way. If we use our conversation, here's a bit of a catch-up on what's been going on the last week or so in Irish rugby. What was Andy Farrell talking about? Any big news lines out of that press conference?
Yeah, I think he spoke for as long as a rugby match. I think Dave Kelly, in our place, kind of put it, he was on for 80 minutes. So I think he covered every topic there was to be covered. Right. I guess the big things are how he's going to manage that period. I think he used the word adaptability 10 times across the interview. I think that's a big focus for him. He is someone who kind of has a message and re-emphasizes that message when he's talking to the media. He definitely comes in knowing what he wants to say and gets that out there. So he's looking back at that England game. He's probably been watching that England game over and over again, given it was the last outing they've had, and it's a pretty poor way of leaving things. And I'd say, I suppose you have to stop yourself from overanalyzing that, but I'm sure he has learned an awful lot about his team through that disastrous first half and better second half and the kind of reminder to Ireland of where they stand and the kind of power rankings at the moment. And they use power, quite deliberately in Ireland have been so far off in the power stakes against big teams. I think we're going to see him try and move towards kind of bigger, more dynamic players over the next year. We're going to see loads of players capped in the next couple of months. James Lowe is the most interesting one. Andy Farrell talked about that. He talked about how much James Lowe has to do to get into the team, and he's not going to walk straight in. I think that's, he has to say stuff like that, but James Lowe's, he's probably the best winger in Ireland right now. Stockdale will have something to say about that, but he's definitely going to get a go. And that's, if you park your concerns, if you have concerns about the residency laws, that's a pretty exciting prospect in a green jersey. But I think he's going to have to cast his net pretty wide because he's going to play, I think it's six tests in 7 weeks, and that's an incredible amount of traditional rugby on the back of the end of this season.
Yes, it's true. There'll be a European Cup final the week before the Italian game. So, you're asking a lot of, not least Johnny Sexton, to play the Italian game. So right off the bat, you would expect in that first Six Nations game ahead of Paris a week later, the Italian game will be a very experimental side. It's an interesting one, isn't it, that England game will be one of the few pieces of tape that he can really get stuck into and look at in depth. It mightn't be the worst thing in the world for Irish rugby, because if we're going over the last 24 months, as you said, bigger sides, both at provincial level with Saracens in particular and international level with England in particular, have had the edge over Irish rugby, the best of Irish rugby. Leo Cullen used the phrase that Saracens strangled them in Newcastle when he was on with us last week. And I'm struck, you think that the solution will be, frankly, we can try and outthink this and come up with different plans to get around this, but frankly, we just need bigger and stronger players. We're just going to meet fire with fire. You suspect that's the conclusion they'll come to?
Well, I mean, within the remit that he has or the resources that he has, he can't, Munster have run aground against bigger, more powerful teams in Europe over the last couple of years. And Johan van Graan went and got permission to sign arguably the most powerful forward in world rugby and one of the most powerful backs as well. Unfortunately, they're going to be with the Springboks for the Rugby Championship because they're, the World Cup winners. Andy Farrell can't go to the market in that way, so he has to be a bit more creative about it. But I do think we're going to see decisions made partly based on a player's ability to win the gain line and to stand up to the ferocity that those kind of teams will bring. And I think France will be the first big test of that on October 31st. I guess Andy Farrell privately will be hoping that Ulster and Leinster go out at the quarterfinal stage because it will give those players a big rest going into the Six Nations. But yeah, I mean, he's heavily reliant on Leinster players, particularly in his forward pack. He could probably get away with resting a few of them against Italy, but at the same time, he won't be able to have them together for that period of time. We saw a few nods towards that kind of more powerful athletic player during the Six Nations, although he was very conservative. I think Ronan Kelleher, the Leinster hooker, will definitely be, moving much closer to starting at hooker. I think he's more in that mold. I think Caelan Doris, had he not been knocked out in those first few seconds, would have started in the back row with Stander.
Levy, if he can get back, is that player. Like, Levy gives Ireland so much. Mm. So, you know, you're starting to build a pack there that's very powerful, very big, very dynamic, and get around the park. You know, we don't have Pacific Islanders ready to go who grew up in the country like England do. Like, England have just blessed with this really, really diverse group of players that they can call on, and they just have all sorts of body types and athletic profiles, and it's just a lovely blend when it comes to building a rugby team. Most of these players came through private schools in South Dublin. So, you know, you are limited in that way. And that's Leo Cullen. The other thing he said after the Saracens game was that it was just genetics. So you're going to have to fight and be smart as well as that. But I think, do think the power will... He did use the words power and dynamism an awful lot during that Six Nations. And I think the England game will only have re-emphasised that.
Yeah. And who are the beefier types that can come into the back line? Maybe, like, Lowe is a very strong athlete. Chris Farrell jumps to mind. But, I mean, there's no Manu Tuilagi hanging around waiting to get his chance, you know?
No, you're right. And I mean, Robbie Henshaw and Bundy Aki are not small men. And, you know, Gary Ringrose, if you take him out of the team, you lose an awful lot in terms of your attacking game. I think one thing that came up during lockdown, there was an audio clip went round of Ben Youngs was talking about playing against, I think it was, no, it wasn't Ben Youngs. It was George Ford was talking about playing against Ireland. I could be wrong. One of those two.
Yeah.
And he said, just we always know that everything goes through Sexton. That everything goes through Sexton. So all we have to do when we're defending is we target Johnny Sexton. If we shut him down, we've gone a long way to shutting Ireland down. So what Ireland, I think, the other thing they need to discover, it can't just be Braun. It has to be another element of their attack. It has to be, say, a Joey Carberry coming from 15 and playing, or, you know, Gary Ringo stepping in as that second number 10. And it's something that people have talked about for an awful long time.
Yeah.
Sexton's such a dominant figure in that back line. And Murray, you know, they've worked together for an awful long time, but Sexton calls the shots in that back line. They're going to have to devise a way of kind of taking the decision-making pressure off him, and also just taking the defensive focus off him over the course of those six games and 7 weeks.
Yeah, Johnny Wilkinson made a similar point during the Six Nations earlier this year. I mean, it's, be it Ford or Youngs, whoever said it, it's not the most egregiously unfair characterization of that Irish team, is it?
No, absolutely not. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Ford. And you can hear it on a ref mic, actually. And I think this one of the things we'll hear an awful lot, depending on whether there's fake noise and that sort of thing. But you can hear what teams are shouting all the time when England play Ireland. They're shouting, Sexton, Sexton, I've got Sexton, I've got Sexton. You can just hear Mauro Itoje all the time going about it. You put him in a Lions team with Owen Farrell, and suddenly New Zealand can target him, and there's a second player there. So whether it's a ball playing 12, Ireland don't really have that. It's not something that we've produced that well. Put Carberry at 15 if he can come back fit. Like, he's one of the big doubts at the start of the season.
Mm.
You know, suddenly you've got a player. But, you know, Munster look at him as a 10, and Ireland have done so far. So these are all things that Farrell, I'm sure, will have been playing with his I met one of the backroom staff during lockdown. He was just, I just never want to see that England game again. So they've definitely done the analysis. They've definitely gone over, but, you know, frame by frame. So Ireland go back to Twickenham, I think, in that
they do, yeah.
A-team tournament. I mean, the last three games against England have been pretty disastrous. That's going to be quite interesting.
Okay. I'm surprised backroom teams member would stop and talk to you. They don't run for cover and are suddenly, they have to take an urgent phone call when you come bobbing up in the street, no?
They have a good look to see if anyone important was around. And hopefully it was during the 2K limits and we were all safe.
Right, okay. So, World Rugby have pushed back the new residency rule as well. You were writing about this in the Irish Independence. 3 years out to 5 years was the rule change before eligibility kicked in. And now it means, because of the pandemic, 2018 signings can play for their respective countries and newfound respective countries in 2021 as opposed to 2023. Is there any super signing in Irish rugby that suddenly is going to be available now? Does this change much?
No, the RFU got all their business done before the end of 2017, really. They got the James Lowe across the line. I think Jared Butler, Chris Clute were the three kind of more established players, the Connacht captain and the Munster back row. And then they signed two teenagers out of school from South Africa, from Munster, one of whom has already gone back, but the other one, Keenan Knox, is going to be part of their senior squad this season. And Roman Salanoa, the tight head prop from Hawaii, who just left Leinster for Munster, they all got in just before. So then the RFU pivoted their business towards signing Irish eligible players from overseas, generally England, really, the guys who have an Irish or can qualify to play for Ireland through parents or grandparents. So Matt Gallagher, who's just joined Munster, or Mike Haley, who's played for Ireland, Will Allison, those kind of guys. So that was the kind of change in strategy. I think Scotland will be the big winners. They've got a South African prop, Pierre Schumann, who's a very good player. You may remember he got sin-binned or gave away the big penalty against Munster in the semi-final last season, or if not the season before. So, and as I think Japan have a few lined up. But most teams would have gone away from signing players on that basis because the rules were changing. They've cited player welfare. I think it's just, you know, even just everything's a challenge this year, so they've decided to push it back. I don't think it's going to have a massive impact, albeit, I'm sure if the RFU knew, they would have tried to get a few more players in, because it just added to the mix of players that they're able to choose from. And you know, they'd already taken most of the heat for the what they were doing anyway, so why stop with the ones that they have?
You know, it's funny, be it Doug Howlett or Rocky Elsom or take your pick, I think the provinces would pride themselves on having signed very good foreign players who've made real impacts. But you, in the paper, had the 9 players who have played for Ireland under this rule. Like, it's far from a complete success story, isn't it? Like, it's the top of the tree, CJ Stander, 41 caps, Bundiaki, 26 caps, and then I suppose you'd have to include Jared Payne as well with 20. Beyond that, the other 6, Rickard Strauss, 17 caps, okay. Nathan White, Quinn Roux, Jean Klein, Rodney Ayew, Robbie Diak. You wouldn't say it's kind of really been a great success. I wouldn't say we got this policy perfected by any means over the years.
No, it is a gamble. I mean, you're signing a player who's usually like 23, 24, because they had a go in their home country and haven't quite made it for whatever reason. They're usually a Super Rugby player. They come over, they got to wait 3 years. So they're usually 26, 27, 28 by the time they actually get capped. I think that Nathan White might have been 31 or 32 by the time he got around to it. And a lot of the times they're signed very strategically for a certain position. So the Joe Schmidt obviously saw, or even before him, they saw a problem with 120 kilo locks. So that's why they went and got Quinn Roux and Jean Klein. Mm. Roux didn't quite work out. He's had a couple of good games for Ireland, but you know, he never really consistently got in. So Klein ended up at the World Cup. I think they wanted Roux to be that player. Stander has been a big success. I think, you know, Payne was 28 when he came over, so he was only ever going to get one World Cup cycle.
Yeah.
Bundy will play, you know, Bundy will get another 20 caps probably for Ireland. CJ will end up 60, 70 caps if he keeps going the way he's going. Again, Strauss was 25, I think, when he came over, so he was only ever going to get that many. And White was, you know, there was very little tight head backup, so they had to get an experienced tight head from New Zealand in. So that was, you know, a sign of the time. So, no, it hasn't been universally successful. I remember, you know, there's been a couple of flops. There's been players who stayed for 1 or 2 years and disappeared off to Japan. There's been, you know, one guy, Danny Poolman, came over to play for Connacht at the same time, I think, as Stander and maybe Gerhard van den Heever. He ended up playing rugby for Seapoint in the AIL and I think still lives in Ireland. So from an integration point of view, it was great success, but he never went and achieved the international things. Whereas Strauss is back living in Bloemfontein back now.
Yeah.
I think Nathan White's back working for Waikato, and Jarrah Payne is an Ulster coach. So, and Robbie Diak owns a winery in South Africa, I think, or he's certainly back there anyway. So it is what it is. Those players were signed expressly with the idea that they come over and play for Ireland. Apart from, I think Diak might have been more of a kind of came over and worked his way through. They did it, and by and large, they've gone home. And that, you know, I never have a problem with the players themselves. I just didn't like the rule in the first place. But it's been hit and miss at times. But the players that they have gotten, those 4 players who have got 17 plus caps, I think they've all contributed to the jersey. They've all played in World Cups, and they've all done quite well when they're.
Mm.
And Lowe will play 30, 40 times for Ireland and do. I think he'll really add to what Ireland have.
Yeah, there's no reason he won't be a big success, even though ironically he called it a silly rule himself. You know, you can see IRFU heads and hands when he said that, but he did say that. Not that he won't avail of it. What age is he? Is he get 28, 29 territory?
I think he's 28, yeah. He came very close to playing for the All Blacks a couple of years ago and has had a kind of a really interesting injury journey. But yeah, I think I haven't got it off the top of my head, but I think it's 27, 28.
There is a text or two in. When James Lowe blows through one defender, hands off another and chips the fullback to score, the reservations about his plastic paddy status will be consigned to history. I suspect you're right. Mike says, how in God's name did the RFU allow Munster to sign those young players from South Africa? They should be made develop their own players. I think that's a fair enough point, isn't it? I mean, signing schoolboys from South Africa to go through the academy, I don't really think that's the policy that we want.
Well, no one gives out about Liverpool signing defenders from the Netherlands or England. If it was just to play for Munster and they were coming over to it's an open market. They're playing in the European Cup. They have a problem. They obviously have seen that they have a problem in these positions. They've gone and done it. The problem I have with it is that they're being developed to play for Ireland ultimately. Mm. Yes, Munster should have better, and I think they have improved and they are getting better at identifying talent. They've moved into different parts of the province. I've no real problem with Munster going to South Africa and signing young players. I don't like the fact that it's with the idea of them ultimately playing for Ireland. I think if they're South African, they should play. They shouldn't be prevented from playing for South Africa, certainly. I think Leinster fans in particular have a bee in a bonnet about Munster's academy, but I mean, they're producing such a surfeit of players themselves, they shouldn't really worry about it.
Mm. Well, once due diligence is being done, like we've seen numerous reports of the culture over there when it comes to young players coming through, like that is a concern. It's a concern across the game. And I don't know enough about the individual situations. I'm sure they have done that. Just before we go, the Sunday Times yesterday, potentially a new job for Joe Schmidt, staying in Dublin?
Yeah, the head of, director of rugby or director of rugby and development or something
director
like that?
Director of rugby and high performance, the Sunday Times had it yesterday. So it seems like working with referees effectively or overseeing that whole area.
Yeah, it's a report in Sunday Times. It's a newly created position as far as I know, a kind of amalgamation of a couple of jobs that have come up. So Alain Roland, the former Irish international who was an international ref the World Cup final in 2011, I think, has left his role, and they are looking to fill that job, but also there's another couple of jobs that they're looking to maybe merge together, and who better than Mr. Rugby, Schmidt. Whether it's challenging enough for him, I'm not sure, because he may want the cut and trust of coaching again and of having a team and of winning, because he was a winner and I'm sure he remains a winner. He was driven towards that and having hands-on players. And I think the one thing he didn't like about international rugby was that didn't have the day-to-day involvement. But from a world rugby point of view, to have someone like that thinking about the game, the laws of the game, how they're implemented, he used to submit these really lengthy, detailed referees reports after every Ireland game that I'm not sure they ever did Ireland any favours, because I think he'd point out rules that laws that the referees didn't know themselves and points of order. And, when Bunyaki was sent off in the World Cup, I think they went after several kind of points of law and like real nitty gritty stuff. But he knows the game more than most other people, and he'd be well able to ref games. So I think he would be a good person in that position, particularly for, say, an international coach who's frustrated, to ring him rather than a ref. And Schmidt would then understand their point of view and then be able to go to the refs and say, look, this is why this guy's annoyed. This is what I think you've done. Explain it to me. And there's a process there, and he kind of would bridge it. And I think we've seen how when he went from Leinster to Ireland, he was well able to wear the green jersey instead of the blue jersey. And I'm sure he would be well able to adapt and represent the referees as well. So I think he's perfect for that kind of role, if that would sate his kind of competitive instincts, because he would lose that.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see where he does pitch up next from a coaching point of view. Rory, we're out of time. Thanks so much. Great stuff.
Cheers, Joe.
Cheers. That's Rory O'Connor there from the Irish Independent. I should bring you up to date on the Europa League matches. Inter are 2-1 up against Bayer Leverkusen. Lukaku has just scored the second for Inter. Meanwhile, 26 minutes on the clock, Manchester United 0, Copenhagen 0. We're back in one sec.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.